Laws of healing on Shabbat, refuah. Laws of healing on Shabbat. And it's interesting to note that our rabbis, in their wisdom, because of how medications were prepared in those days, one of the acts involved in preparing medication is the act of grinding. So it's called tochen, tachina, tochen. The act of grinding, which is an act, which is one of the 39 forms of work, which we talked about right at the beginning of the series, which are prohibited on Shabbat, which went into the building of the sanctuary. Where did the act of grinding go into? The preparation of dyes, of colors. In those days, you had to make the colors yourself. You couldn't go to a Home Depot and pick up a paint. There's no Home Depot, there's no paint stores. There was no hardware stores. You could go and get dyes. You'd have to make it yourself. And the ways they made it was from vegetation. So that's where a lot of the laws of harvesting and sowing and planting and all these things come from, the planting and the preparation of dyes. They had to go through all this process to get the dye to make the color. What do they do with the color? They used it to make the parochet, which is the curtain separating the holy from the holy of holies. So in the building of the sanctuary, the first sanctuary, the prototype of our synagogues today, and the prototype of the Beit HaMikdash, which is the temple, which is interesting because it was in the news yesterday, they found a tablet from the time of Josiah, Yoshiyahu HaMelech, which is about 2800 years ago, something like that. They found a tablet where he instructs the Kohanim to repair the Beit HaMikdash. And the Muslims deny that they found it. They deny it. They deny that they unearthed it on the Temple Mount. They say it came from somewhere else. But it came from the Temple Mount. Mm-hmm. All the excavation they're doing, they threw away all the garbage. A lot of it is archaeologically valuable. And they found this tablet from the time of Yoshiyahu. And so what was the prototype? The Mishkan, it's interesting, had three sections. You have the outer courtyard, called the Azara. You had the inner courtyard, which is called the Kodesh, the Holy. And only the Kohanim were allowed in the Holy. Everyone was allowed in the Azara, in the courtyard. You had two sections, you had the men's section, the women's section. But you had to be pure, you had to be Tahor, which is why today no Jews are allowed into the Temple Mount. We're not allowed into the Temple Mount from Jewish law, because we are not ritually pure. There's no way of purifying ourselves. That was the outer courtyard. The inner courtyard was holy. Only the Kohanim, only the priest could go in. The Kohen could go in. And in the inner courtyard were three things. The table, on which there were 12 loaves of bread every day. 12 loaves of bread. Actually, it was matzah. 12 loaves of matzah bread. But the matzah was 4 inches thick. Thick matzah, not thin matzah that we have here today. A table. A menorah. The menorah is on the outside in the courtyard, in the inner courtyard, the Kodesh, the holy part. And you had the gold altar. The gold altar was an altar for offering up the ketoret, which is the incense. And the Rambam says the reason for the incense is so that whenever you came near the temple, you get a beautiful fragrance coming from it. The people should associate, it's very important, to associate spirituality with a good perfume. It's a brilliant idea. You know, you go in, it's like the stores today, Macy's, you know, how do they attract people? You put the perfume right near the entrance. The perfume's right near the entrance. So also in the temple, they put the perfume right near the entrance. So in the inner courtyard, the perfume, the incense would be there. So three things in the inner courtyard. That was the holy, and then you had the Holy of Holies. What was in the Holy of Holies? Only one thing, the Ark of the Covenant, the Aron HaKodesh. The Ark of the Covenant, in which were three things: the Ten Commandments, the staff of Aaron, and the bottle of manna, which is this week's parasha. There are three things in the Holy of Holies and the Ark. And that was in the Holy of Holies. What separated the Holy from the Holy of Holies? A curtain. That curtain is called the parochet. And today in the synagogues, you have that. Before the Holy Ark, you have a curtain. So it symbolizes the same idea. We get it from the building of the sanctuary, because you had a separation between the Holy, which is the synagogue, and the Holy of Holies, which is the Ark. So that's the distinction. And that's where the idea of a parochet, the curtain, came from. Now this curtain was dyed into different colors, blue, red, all different kinds of dyes, and to make those dyes was involved this work of grinding. Preparing dyes, grinding was involved, and therefore it's one of the 39 forms of work which is prohibited on Shabbat, which is the act of grinding. So now preparing medications in those days involved the act of grinding. And since preparing medications involved the act of grinding, the rabbis made a law saying that a person is not allowed to take medication on Shabbat. Not only did they say that, but they said any act of healing is not allowed on Shabbat. Now we're going to quantify that, because for every law there is loopholes and there are leniencies. And it's very important when you learn the law not to just learn the strictures but also to learn the leniencies. They did not make a blanket statement. We know that it's very important in the Torah. Life is the first priority. The Torah says, "V'chai b'hem," you will live by these commandments. And the Gemara says, "V'loshi amud b'hem," you should live by it and not die by it. Judaism is a religion of life. If you compare it to Islam today, they are suicide jockeys. We are not suicide jockeys by any means. We value life. Judaism is a religion of life, because life, through life, we can grow. A person's dead, they can't grow. And so therefore we don't pray for death. We pray for life. Anything which is life-giving is valuable. And therefore, obviously, if it's a question of life and death on Shabbat, it's called Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh pushes aside not only Shabbat, but it also pushes aside Yom Kippur. So you can break Shabbat to heal someone if they're dying. You can break Yom Kippur to heal someone if they're dying. So to save a life, you can break every mitzvah in the Torah except for three. There are three cardinal sins which a person cannot transgress even to save a life. What are they? Number one, murder. So the person puts a gun to your head and says, "Kill so-and-so, otherwise I'll kill you." Can't do it, sorry. Who says, "My blood is redder than his blood"? Who says? So therefore, a person got to give their life and not commit murder. Number two, a person has to give their life and not commit adultery or incest or any kind of immorality. It's Yehrag Vali Avor. A person's got to give their life and not transgress. And number three, idolatry, which is Avodah Zarah. A Jew, many Jews gave their lives in the Middle Ages. They refused to convert to Christianity. They gave their lives rather than convert, because it's idolatry, paganism. A Jew is not allowed to worship idols. So even if they have to give their lives, but Shabbat is not one of these three. Kashrut is not one of these three. It's not one of the three biggies. And therefore a person is allowed to... The doctor says, you have to eat pork just to live. Or in situations of famine. I know in the First World War, my grandparents were in Jerusalem. There was a tremendous famine. They're eating horse meat. A lot of religious Jews ate horse meat because there's no other food. If there's no other food, it's saving a life. You're allowed to eat anything. So let's go back to Shabbat. So obviously healing on Shabbat is allowed if it's a case of danger. And the rabbis gave us three different kinds of sickness. They defined sickness in three different ways. The lowest level of sickness in which a person is not allowed to take medication is called michush be'alma. Michush be'alma means a person has a little mild sniffle, a little cold. But I'm walking around, I'm operating as normal. Rabbi said, no medications. Why? If you take the medication, what's going to happen in those days? You have to prepare the medication. What's involved in preparation of medication? Grinding. The mortar and the pestle. Go and smash the medication. And it was until recently, about, I don't know, 40, 50 years ago, any drugstore, they would actually prepare the medication on the spot. Not like today. You know, you go into a drugstore, everything's ready off the shelf. They do mix it today. They mix it with liquids to prepare the liquid medication. They mix the powder. They already have the powder, and they just mix it. All the antibiotics is already prepared in powder form. But in those days, they would actually grind it. In front of your very eyes, they would make it for you. And therefore, we're not talking about something far-fetched. We're talking about something 50 years ago, which is applicable. The rabbinical law would be applicable to 50 years ago. Until today, we keep this rabbinical law. So Rabbi said, we don't want people to come to grinding on Shabbat. And therefore, a person who is mildly sick and is walking around healthy is not allowed to do anything to do medication. No medication. That's the first level. That's the lowest level. Yes. You're allowed to take vitamins on Shabbat, and you're allowed to take vitamins. And the reason for that is, Rav Moshe Feinstein tells us, because anything which is food for healthy people is not considered medication. So a person, when they're healthy, takes vitamins as a supplement. A person can take vitamins even on Shabbat. It's not considered medication. Vitamins don't heal you. Believe me, they don't heal. They just help your immune system. If you're lucky, they may do something. And usually they don't do. I know doctors who refuse to take vitamins. They've already got enough metals and stuff in their bodies. They won't get rid of the metals. But vitamins are not medication. Therefore, you're allowed to take vitamins on Shabbat. Anything which is not medication, you're allowed to take on Shabbat. Oh, insulin, definitely. We're going to come to it. We're going to talk about insulin is life-threatening and diabetes is life-threatening. Even better. Prescription thing, for sure. The doctor tells you, you have to take it, you have to take it. So the first level, the lowest level we said is a person who is just walking around with a little sniffle, a little mild headache. The rabbi said you can't take medication. That's the lowest level. It's called michush be'alma. Second level is a person who is nafala mishkav. He's in bed. A flu, fever, temperature, bad headache. Can't operate normally. Allowed to take medications. He's allowed to break all rabbinical laws on Shabbat. Person in that situation can break any rabbinical laws. Person's going to know what is rabbinical, what is from the Torah. It's very important to know the difference. What is it, Torah law? You're not allowed to break Torah law. Person's in bed, but he's not in danger of life. Not allowed to break Torah law. Can break rabbinical law. But one of the rabbinical laws is not taking medications. He's allowed to break that law. He can tell a non-Jew to do any work for him. Because telling a non-Jew to do work on Shabbat is rabbinically asur, forbidden. So therefore, you can tell the non-Jew, go and buy me some medication from the store. No problem. Because the non-Jew is going to go and buy the medication. My wife was sick once, and we had a non-Jewish friend who came to help us. She said, I feel great around Jews on Shabbat. I said, why? I feel so powerful. You guys are so helpless. It really boosted her self-esteem. So she said, I feel great. I'd like to come around you on Shabbat. Yes?
What if you know that when you have like a mild
Excellent, excellent question. And the answer is, you're allowed to break rabbinical law at the beginning. You don't have to wait till you're in bed to break the rabbinical law. If you know yourself, if I don't take the medication now, I'm going to be in bed soon. You don't take the medication now. So you don't have to wait for the last case scenario. The guy says, you know what? He's got appendicitis. You know what? It's not life-threatening yet. Wait till it bursts, and then... No, we don't have to wait. Don't wait. Don't wait. Exactly. Don't wait. The guy's on the floor, he's in a coma. He's got a few more hours to live. Wait till after Shabbat. No, don't wait. We don't know. Even doubtful danger, break Shabbat. The rabbis say if a person has a case and they refuse to break Shabbat, they say, I've got to ask the rabbi first. The rabbi says he's a murderer. First, break the Shabbat for a sick person and then ask questions later. You can always do atonement for breaking Shabbat, but you can never bring back a life. We have a case in the shul right now where a child is sick. And the parents are very concerned. They want to give him a brit. They want to give him a circumcision. The rabbis are saying, don't give him a circumcision. Wait. The Shulchan Aruch says, you can always circumcise a child later, but you can never bring back his life. So when it comes to life and death issues, we are very strict to prolong life. That's very, very important. A person should conduct his life. And realize the first priority is to safeguard life. Very, very important. There are many laws in the Torah regarding saving life. One of them is, the Torah says, Al tamod al adam. Don't stand by your neighbor's blood. Al tamod adam recha. Don't stand by your neighbor's blood. You see someone in danger, there's a mitzvah to save. You see someone in the river, there's a mitzvah to go and save. Unless, of course, it's dangerous for yourself. Person's going to know the difference. So the second level we said is the level where a person is going to be in bed. Then they can break all the rabbinical laws. The third level, the worst level of sickness, obviously, is it's called pikuach nefesh. Happened to me, my son had appendix. It burst on Shabbat. And I went to take him to hospital. And someone saw me in the van. But I found out a week later... She said, oh, that's why the rabbi was in the car. That's why. But you got to be careful. Someone drove me, but it doesn't make a difference. If I couldn't find anyone, it was a doctor, actually. I was going there anyway. But No, it's a case of where it's a mitzvah to drive. It's a mitzvah to... And you should do it publicly. You should do it with showing off. I'm doing this mitzvah. A person should do it in a way where I'm doing the mitzvah. A person should not... It says when there's a problem in this... had a case once in Yom Kippur where someone fainted. It says the rabbi should go and call. Shouldn't delegate. Because people think, you know what, he doesn't want to do it. He wants someone else to do it for him. So it's very important to give the example, and sometimes it's a mitzvah, just like it's a mitzvah to keep Shabbat, it's a mitzvah to break Shabbat sometimes. We have to realize, either way it's a mitzvah. Because we know that life comes first. So it's very, very important. So life comes first, but a person has to know the laws well enough to know how to minimize the breaking of Shabbat. And their laws. For example, you have to go to the hospital on Shabbat. You can go one way, you can't come back. The person who is sick can request someone else to go with him. If it's a child, obviously the parents go with him. If it's someone else, they can say, I don't want to go by myself. It's a psychological thing. So the second person is allowed to break Shabbat as well, just to accompany the person. But you can't come back. You can go one way. The only exception to this rule is the doctors and nurses. The people who work in hospitals are allowed to go and come back. And the reason for that is interesting. If you don't allow them to come back, they won't go in the first place. So therefore the rabbi said, it's going to lead to danger to life down the road. Even though right now there's no danger to life. Why should the doctor be allowed to come back home in his car from the hospital? It's very interesting. Because we tell him, you're not allowed to come back home. You have to walk home. He says, I'm not going to bother next time. I'm not going to go to the hospital. So therefore he's allowed to go and come back. It's interesting. Yes.
If you're a single parent, for example, and there's no one to support, it is then appropriate to be able to go both ways because you...
If you have children at home, you mean? Uh-huh. If you have children at home and there's a danger to them and there's no one to look after them. A person's got to know.
But that's what you
if there's a danger, a person has to minimize. Try and minimize as much as possible. Let me give you some examples. For example, a person can drive to the hospital, take someone to the hospital. They cannot switch off the engine. They cannot close the door. So what do you do? It's very simple. In Robert Wood Johnson's courtesy parking, you drive up to the courtesy parking, and he takes over. You leave the car running, you leave the door open, you know, give him the thing, and let him take over. That's it. It's very simple. So if you have courtesy parking, that's the simplest way to go. He parks it for you, don't tell him anything, he does everything for you, and you go and pick up your car after Shabbat. That's the simplest way. Otherwise, there are issues over there about minimizing, so you're allowed to break Shabbat to go there, that's it. Once you get there, that's it. Broke, that's it. Not to do anything else. That's it.
So you stay there until after Shabbat.
That's right, you stay there. Mm-hmm. And which is normally the case anyway, because the person's sick and you want to stay with the person, so there's no real hardship. And today we're very fortunate because in every hospital in the area there's kosher food. And the Bikur Cholim Society, which is a society of Jews who visit the sick, they have stores in the hospital, have closets with kosher supplies. So everyone, there's no problem at all. Plus the hospitals are very nice today. You have waiting rooms, you have beautiful places where you can stay. And they encourage it. And it's very, very important. So it's three levels. So the first level is Michush Be'alma. And Michush Be'alma, we said, if a person's walking around healthy, slightly sick, not allowed to take medications. Now it's interesting because today we're even more lenient. And it's a tremendous leniency. Is that today there are rabbis who consider analgesics, aspirins, all the non-aspirins, pain relievers, all the different kinds of Tylenols and all these different things, as people who are healthy take them. Now today Americans are crazy, we're all mushuk of it. Mental disease is rampant. I don't know, 30% of Americans are on some kind of mental drug, tranquilizer. It's amazing statistics. They say in third world countries people are much more mentally healthy than in America. Maybe they can't afford anything, so they can't afford to see a psychiatrist. Anyway, so today a lot of people just pop pills. And a little thing, mild, little cold, they're popping already these analgesics. So therefore, they are considered today machal briyim. They're considered food for healthy people. So just like vitamins are food for healthy people, all these mild painkillers are also considered food for healthy people. And therefore, even on Shabbat, a person has a mild little headache. Mild headache. But on a weekday, take the medication. It's like a medication for people who are healthy, just to stay healthy. So therefore, it becomes like a vitamin, and therefore today you're allowed to take these analgesics for mild things. The question is, the more potent kinds of analgesics, those are forbidden, unless a person will be in bed if they don't take it. But the mild, the small things, the Tylenols, those kind of things would be allowed even on a regular Shabbat, because people, even the healthy, are taking it. Healthy people are taking it. Amazing, crazy. You know how the generations have fallen. My mother's generation would not pop pills. My mother will not take a pill. She has a headache, won't take a pill. She has a cold, won't take a pill. On principle. That's a principle. She doesn't take pills. Unless she's really sick. If she takes a pill, you know she's really sick. All right, small thing, she won't take a pill. Today we've degenerated our bodies, our physical, mental weaknesses. We take pills of the smallest things. Discomfort. Any small discomfort, we take a pill. Doesn't mean a person's sick. It means a person is healthy and he's taking a pill. And therefore, we'd be allowed to take that pill on Shabbat as well. Yes?
I understand that you said a non-Jew could then take the car or do certain things for an individual. What about a religious Jew asking a non-Jew?
Not allowed. Not allowed.
Jew.
Not allowed. The Torah not says, Lifnei iver lo ten mechshol. Don't put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Don't put a stumbling block in front of the blind implies, what is a blind person? Person who can't see, or a person doesn't know, not aware. There's three cases the rabbis talk about. One case is the actual case the Torah talks about. There's a blind man walking down the street. You put your foot up in front of him. The Torah says not allowed. Number two is a person doesn't know anything. Ask you for advice. The rabbi says that's a blind man. Doesn't know. He goes to the stockbroker and he says, which stock should I buy? And the stockbroker says, buy this. And he's just taking advantage of him. That is considered putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. The third case scenario is tripping someone up spiritually. The guy comes to your house and he says, is this food kosher? You say, yeah, sure. Have some food. And he doesn't know. He's not aware. He's relying on you. That is a stumbling block in front of the blind. It's a similar case. Person doesn't know about the laws of Shabbat. Doesn't care. Doesn't know. They don't know. They're not aware of what's going on. And you trip them up and tell them, do this for me. There was a case. There's cases, many cases, of people who are asked. You stand on the street, sometimes the synagogue lights need to be switched on. And you see a person, doesn't look Jewish. Can you come in and switch the lights on? Sure, no problem. Comes in, switches the lights on. He says, by the way, why do you ask me to do it? I'm also Jewish. But that's very important. The first question should be, are you Jewish? Say, yes, sorry, goodbye. Get someone else. Yes, not just trip someone up. It's very important. You can't use another Jew to do the dirty work. Can't. Not allowed, yes.
You said the rabbis now are more lenient because of the Tylenol and
right.
That type of thing.
Right.
Which rabbis made that decision to become more lenient?
This Rabbi Avadi Yosef, this is the great leaders of the generation. Some great leaders of the great generation. You can't just follow anyone to come along and make up these laws. But there are Rabbi Neuwirth wrote a book. You can get a book in English called The Shabbat According to the Halakha, Shemirat Shabbat. It's Rabbi Neuwirth in Israel. In Hebrew it's called Shemirat Shabbat Kilchata, two volumes. Goes through all the different laws of Shabbat. So it gives you all the modern applications of the laws of Shabbat. Okay, so we've covered three categories. Let's go back and recap. Number one is a person who's walking around who has a mild something. So if it's anything beyond a Tylenol, not allowed to take anything. Number two is a person who is going to be in bed or is in bed now, but is not life-threatening, is allowed to break all rabbinical laws. And number three is a person who's in danger of life can break Torah laws. So what happened? I took my son to the hospital. And I get there, he needs surgery. What do you have to do? You have to sign. Mm-hmm. Sign. So now, writing your name in Jewish law is forbidden on Shabbat. Why? You're not allowed to write, from Torah law, two letters. Why two letters? Because again, going back to the building of the Mishkan, of the sanctuary, when they put up the posts, what they had was a portable sanctuary. And they had sockets and posts. The sockets were made of silver. The posts were made of wood, covered with gold. Gold-plated wood. Beautiful. Must be a beautiful sight. And each socket was made for each post. So on each socket they would write Aleph. On the post, Aleph. Bet, bet. So this way you know which socket fit which post. So that's where we learn out that a person is not allowed to write more than two letters. Two letters or more on Shabbat is forbidden from the Torah. Less than that is forbidden from the rabbis. So now you go to the hospital and say, sign something. So minimize. How do you minimize? Right, less than one, less than two.
Will they accept your initials?
No, you don't even have to do initials. Just squiggle. That's what I did. Squiggle. That's like signature. You want your signature, that's all. Give them a little signal. Huh?
I'll bet that's with you.
An X is one letter. But even better than one letter is a squiggle. Doesn't mean anything. So therefore, do a squiggle. Now, also, from Torah law, it's only prohibited if you do it in the way which you normally do it. If you do it in a different kind of way, which is called a shinui, it's very important. The word shinui is different. You do it in a different way. You do it in your left hand instead of your right hand. You're righty. And you do it in your left hand, it's not from the Torah. It's not forbidden from the Torah. So you do it with your left hand, you do a squiggle, you're okay. It's for a sick person, no problem. So you've got to know these minor details to know how to minimize. So what difference does it make? You're allowed to break the Torah. But the answer is, there's different ways of breaking the Torah. I want to minimize the breaking of the Torah. Yes?
Could you actually write letters with the left hand if you want to be writing it?
If they insist it. So you have to write letters, so write it with your left hand. Okay. That's what I did. I wrote with my left hand, squiggled my left hand, that's how they accepted it. But they were very insistent. I'm a religious Jew, I can't, it's my Sabbath. No, you got to sign. Sign, no, I'm fine. They want you to sign, it's Pigo and Nefesh, the child is suffering. Sign the paper already and get out of the way. Do it. Get moving. Don't waste time. The main thing is not to waste time. And in persons in danger, a person shouldn't waste time. However, a person must try and minimize the desecration of Shabbat. And therefore it's imperative that the person have a good idea of exactly how to do this. For example, laws of writing. We learn from the Mishkan, from the building of the sanctuary, that they had pillars made of wood which were coated with gold, gold-plated pillars. And each pillar went into a silver socket. How do they know which pillar went into which socket? They write letter Aleph on the pillar and letter Aleph on the socket. Letter Bet on the next pillar and letter Bet on the next socket. This way they knew which pillars and which sockets matched. From there we learn out that it is prohibited from the Torah to write two letters. However, less than two letters is prohibited from the rabbis. So now the person is obliged to write in order to save a life. A person should minimize and know how to minimize. So a person writes less than one letter, or a person writes one letter, a person has minimized the action. So therefore, if a person squiggles their signature, instead of writing letters, squiggles the signature, they've minimized the act, the prohibition. Similarly, even better, is to use one's other hand. This person's right-handed, writes with their right hand, should use their left hand. Person's left-handed, should use the right hand. This is called a shinui. This is called a change. Changing. The Torah only prohibits actions in the normal way. Person changes the way it's done. Does not transgress the Torah prohibition. Therefore, when a person has to break Shabbat, and it doesn't take any longer time, a person should try and minimize. If it does take a longer time by minimizing, a person should obviously take the shortest possible time to break Shabbat, to get the person to the hospital. Let's now move on to multi-purpose foods. Multi-purpose foods are allowed to be eaten or drunk on Shabbat, even though a person's intention is for healing. For example, a person has a sore throat and a person wants to drink some tea, hot tea, to cure his sore throat, his or her sore throat. A person wants to drink some wine or whiskey for their cold. All multi-purpose foods and drinks are allowed on Shabbat, even though the intention is specifically for medication, as long as they are drunk and eaten in a normal way, in which case the medicational properties are not easily recognized by a person who is watching. For example, a person has a sore throat and wants to gargle with whiskey and spit it out. That is prohibited. But to just slowly sip the whiskey is allowed.
to slowly sip the coffee or tea is allowed. A person is not allowed to gargle with salt water on Shabbat, because then people can see that they are doing it expressly for the purpose of healing. So this applies to anything which can be eaten or drunk and is not recognizable as healing, even though a person's intent is to heal. These things are allowed. A course of medication which started prior to Shabbat, for example, antibiotics and other kinds of courses of medication, are allowed to be taken on Shabbat. The pill may be taken on Shabbat. It's not really a medication. It's something which is eaten by healthy people. Therefore, may be taken. Obviously, the rabbi has to give a dispensation for a woman to take the pill. Obviously, they have to fulfill their mitzvah, prove the mitzvah of having children. And there's other situations where the pill may be taken. But a question has to be asked to the rabbi before being able to take the pill. Exercising on Shabbat. Exercising on Shabbat. The Talmud says that a person may exercise on Shabbat as long as, number one, there is no intent to sweat. The rabbis prohibited a person sweating on Shabbat, specifically with the intent of sweating. Number two, no equipment is allowed to be used on Shabbat for exercising. So therefore a person may do push-ups, but no exercising with equipment, barbells and other things. Number three, a person must like to exercise. They don't like to exercise, they're ruining their Shabbat. They're ruining the simcha, the joy of Shabbat. Running on Shabbat is not allowed. However, a person is allowed to run to a mitzvah. And in fact, a person should run to a mitzvah every day of the week. And the halacha is a person should run to the mitzvah. King David says, Lebet Hashem Nahalech Beragish. I will run to the house of God. And a person is not allowed to run away from a mitzvah. A person should walk slowly away from a mitzvah, but run towards a mitzvah. And therefore, even running towards the mitzvah on Shabbat is allowed. The Talmud says that a rabbi saw two people running on Shabbat, and he told them, "You're breaking Shabbat." They replied, "We're running to the synagogue." And he replied, "Okay, if that's the case, that's okay." The person must run to a mitzvah. I find it's very important to be the first one in the synagogue. And it's called philo. The person should be the first in and last out. Not lifo, not last in and first out. And we can see the person's intentions by how they behave in this regard. If he's first in and last out, it means he loves coming to synagogue. If he's last in and first out, not a good sign. So exercising, we require all the following conditions. Number one, no intention to sweat, no external equipment. It must be something which is pleasurable. And no running on Shabbat. However, a person may run to synagogue. A person is allowed on Shabbat to sit in the sun to get a tan. Dieting is also allowed, as long as it doesn't ruin one's Shabbat. Putting a band-aid on is also allowed. Why? Because a band-aid is not considered medication. So a person has a minor cut. The band-aid just prevents it from getting dirty. So a person may wash the cut, and if they're scared of infection, which could be a safek pikuah nefesh, a person may put an antiseptic, hydrogen peroxide, other kind of antiseptic on it, and then put a band-aid on top. If possible, a person should prepare the band-aid before Shabbat. However, if it's not possible, a person may put the band-aid on Shabbat. Walking with crutches or a stick, a person who is unable to walk without crutches, and there's no eruv. If there's an eruv, there's no problem. A person can use crutches or sticks, wheelchairs. Obviously, if there's an eruv, a person can carry, there's no issue. In a place where there's no eruv, Is a person allowed to use crutches? And the answer is, if it's impossible for that person to walk at all without crutches, they may use crutches on Shabbat. Similarly, if it's impossible for the person to walk without the walking stick, they may use the walking stick on Shabbat because it becomes like an extension of their feet, and they're not going to carry it, they're going to use it every step of the way. However, if a person can walk without the stick, or they can walk without the crutches, and they're just using the crutches or stick sometimes for support, they're not allowed to use that in a place where there is no Eruv. Prosthetics, a person who has a prosthetic limb, a leg, they're allowed to use them on Shabbat because they're extensions of the limbs, and therefore they're allowed to use them even when there is no Eruv. Okay. The Rambam gives us the guidelines in terms of Pikuach Nefesh. We find the Torah tells us in Vayikra, in Leviticus chapter 18, verse 5, Ushmartem et chokotai ve'mishpatai. You will guard my statutes and my commandments, asher yaseh otam ha'adam v'chai behem, which a person will do and live by them. What's live by them? So Talmud says in Masechet Yuma, Daf Pei Hei Amud Bet, in Tractate Yuma on page 85, slide 2, V'chai behem, the Torah says, live by them, V'lo she'amud behem. A person should live by the mitzvot and not die by the mitzvot. Mi she'esh l'choli, she'esh bo sakana, if a person is sick and is in danger of one's life, mitzvah lechalel alav Shabbat. It's a mitzvah to desecrate the Shabbat. And the Talmud says the rationale is that desecrate one Shabbat so that he should keep many Shabbats. In other words, it's a small investment. Person breaks one Shabbat, and eventually that person, the other person, will keep many Shabbats. However, the Talmud says, even if he can't keep many Shabbats, you know, you're just prolonging his life for even 1 second, it is allowed to break Shabbat even to prolong someone's life by 1 second, by 1 minute, by 1 hour. So there's no time limit in terms of prolonging life. And there's a negative commandment, Torah tells us, Lo ta'amod al dam recha. Don't stand by idly while your neighbor's blood is being spilled. So there's an obligation to heal someone, to stop a person from losing their life. And a negative commandment in that. The Rambam tells us, the rationale is that the laws of the Torah are not a vengeance on the world. God is not like a capricious king in the Middle Ages. The king might legislate laws which don't make sense, have no meaning at all, just to increase burdens on the people. For example, Pharaoh tells the people, his slaves, the Jewish slaves, that he will no longer give them, provide them straw to make bricks, even though it would be tremendously inefficient, and obviously his treasury would lose money. There were not enough bricks being produced. It was a law of vengeance. He was taking vengeance on them by increasing their workload. God is not like that. If God increases our workload by giving us commandments to do, not because he is a vengeful God, but he's a merciful God. And his commandments are commandments of mercy and kindness to us and increased peace in the world. Okay, so it's very, very important that a person save a life on Shabbat, can break Shabbat. And it is forbidden to ask questions when there's a question of saving a life. A person sees someone faint, doesn't know what's going on, should not ask any questions, should run and call the ambulance. And even if it involves breaking Shabbat. And Talmud says a person who asks questions in that situation is considered a murderer because they may be causing someone to die. And who should break Shabbat in that situation? It should not be done by non-Jews. It should not be done by small children. It should be done by an intellectual, a person who has the abilities, intellectual abilities, an adult. And the reason for that is, and if possible, even done by the rabbi. The rabbi has to give the example. And the reason for that is, if people see that the rabbi is hesitant, or the adults, the Jewish adults, are hesitant to break Shabbat in a situation of pikuach nefesh, they themselves might not do it next time. They say, hey, the rabbi called someone else to break Shabbat. They'll say, oh, it's ideally it's better not to break Shabbat. So therefore, in this situation, we are strict that the greater the person, the more knowledge the person has, they're the person who should break Shabbat. They should give the example to break Shabbat. So people should not have qualms about breaking Shabbat for the sake of someone who is sick. And furthermore, a person who is knowledgeable knows how to break Shabbat and how to minimize the desecration of Shabbat. And therefore, ideally, it's better for a person who is knowledgeable to break Shabbat.